Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. As always, I'm excited to be here to have conversations around the world of wellness and how it pertains to men. This is the highlight of my week, is having these conversations and doing this. I enjoy it so, so much. What makes it even better is when I have somebody sitting across the table from me that I appreciate, I respect, and this particular guest is one that I would say 100%. In fact, I view him as a coach to me, a leader to me. He is a phenomenal guy when it comes to character. The nuggets of wisdom that he has are unbelievable. But professionally, also, we are talking to a world-class individual. We're talking to a mixed martial arts coach, business owner, owns Tushido MMA, a dojo here, happens to be in my hometown, that has produced multiple professional fighters, including up to the very highest level of mixed martial arts, the UFC. Multiple UFC fighters have come through the tutelage of the gentleman we're about to talk to today. Success leaves clues. Anytime I have the opportunity to talk to a world-class coach, that is something that I do not, I don't take that lightly. And I listen a little bit more carefully when I'm able to talk to somebody like that. This is a guy who's actually taught me athletically a little bit, if you can believe it. I'm not an athlete at all, but this is a guy who's actually given me some cool striking lessons in MMA. My granddaughter, I plan on getting her trained by him in his dojo. He is a world-class coach, but he's also a world-class guy. David Lee, thank you for taking time out of your day to be on HeCast today.
Thank you so much, Mike. What an introduction.
I know you're uncomfortable hearing that shit.
A little bit.
You're one of those guys. Is that an MMA thing? Is that something right from the start where you try and create a mindset with fighters that, like, I've met so many fighters who are kind of like, oh gosh, golly, you know, bashful about who they are, but then they are absolute machines inside of an octagon, inside of a ring. Is that a mentality that you teach early on?
I really do. I came from a martial arts background. So for me, I was never, you know, I didn't get into the martial arts for combat sports. You know, it just was sort of a weird thing.
Well,
it
didn't exist back then.
Well, it did, but I mean, it wasn't what it was today. I mean, it wasn't even called MMA then. It was called NHB. It was no holds barred. That's what they called it, right? So no gloves, headbutts were still allowed. It was a much different sport. Certainly wasn't sanctioned around the world like it is today.
Yeah, it was a lot more underground back then.
It was. The UFC was around, but at that time they called it the dark days because they weren't allowed to broadcast anywhere. Like nobody, the pay-per-views couldn't pick it up. They weren't sanctioned in any city. And then that's when it got sold, and it got sold to Zuffa in Vegas. And then those guys just blew it right up. You know, they got a sanction by the Vegas Athletic Commission.
Well, they regulated it though.
Yeah. Wasn't that that's just it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting story how that happened. Probably don't have time right now, but it was a very interesting story how that happened. It really gives you a real insight into how business gets run at that level and how sleazy it can be. But that's definitely a conversation for another time, a very interesting one. But for me, respect was always important to me, you know, respecting what we were doing as martial artists, but also respecting, you know, once we got into the sport thing, it was really important for me to show respect to our opponents because we can't have this journey without them. You know, they are part of this journey. And so if you don't respect the people you're competing against, to me, it just... It's not something that I want to be involved in. As the sport grew, of course, attention and eyeballs got on it. And so we got a little bit more of that Conor McGregor thing going on now, right? The WWE kind of thing.
Absolutely. Theatrics.
And there's room for it. You know, it can be exciting. The problem that I had was that there's only one Conor McGregor, and he's very good at what he does. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he was successful is because he's smart and he's actually quite funny. You know, like, he has crossed the line on a few occasions where I'm like, you know, that wasn't a good look, Conor. Too far, right? Yeah. When he starts talking about people's wives or nationalities, that kind of, you know, I find that very, I don't like it. You know,
the level of disrespect.
Yeah, it's too much for me, right? But, you know, when they're making fun of each other's styles, whatever, I mean, you know, when Conor McGregor goes, you know, you'll do fucking nothing, you know, like, I mean, it's like, nobody can say that like Conor McGregor, right? And get away with it. You know, he's got the good accent for, you know, everything. But the problem is, and I saw this even on the regionals show, you got these young guys coming up, you know, some of them haven't even had a single win on a regional show, right? Or, you know, we're talking about fighting in front of 400 people. They're all your parents and friends. And they're talking about red panty nights, like they're Conor McGregor.
The bravado they bring
in. And they're talking just, all this shit and disrespect. And I didn't have time for it. You know, it's like, it's one thing when we're one, you're good at it and you're putting up with it and you're trying to get money out of it. Right. I mean, that's what Conor's doing.
Right.
Is he's trying to build up and he's trying to create eyes on the product.
Absolutely.
And he's done it better than anybody. Yep. You know, I mean, that he's with his sale of his whiskey, he's now really damn close to being a billionaire, you know,
and, unbelievable.
You know, $600 million just this last week from his whiskey sales. He made, you know, $100 million or whatever in his Mayweather fight. I mean, the guy has done a lot of really good things.
Yeah, he's married business in fighting better than anybody in recent memory. It was groundbreaking. And certainly the best in MMA history.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's groundbreaking. You know, now that only works when you're winning.
Yes.
Right. So we got to keep that in mind too. He struck gold because he came into the sport and actually backed up what he said he was going to do.
Right.
Some of that is obviously his skill set and his mindset without question.
Yep.
But we can't, there is a certain level of luck in life. And people hate to say that because it gives the wrong sense of what that means.
Right.
When I talk about luck, I'm not talking about people being successful by accident.
Right.
Right. But with luck, what I'm talking about is you can have you can be the best fighter on the planet, but if you get thrown wrong in a wrestling move, right? And boom, your knee's gone, right? That's what I'm talking about. The incidentals, the things that you have no control over, which is life, right? We all have that. And then how we handle that is, you know, that is what makes us, you know, either weak or strong or whatever, you know, how
how we respond, right? It's how
we all go through these crises, right? Yes. You know, you had recently been through a crisis yourself, you know, that was, you know, something that hit home close to me too, because I went through something very similar with my wife, really only about a year before you were going through it. And I remember talking to you about it. And so, you know, we go through these things and you either come out of it a better person or a worse person.
You know, I'm going to marry that to something you said earlier. As we started talking, you talk about the opponent being part of the journey.
Yeah.
And that is a really cool way of looking at adversity.
Yeah.
If you can kind of freeze everything and look at whatever adversity it is that you're going through, like I think about right now, like business with COVID, people who are going through this pandemic right now, if you could take a look and just kind of stop everything and say, okay, this piece of adversity is part of my story.
It is.
And how I react to it is how the story is going to continue on.
How boring are people that have only had good things happen to them?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, sit down with somebody who's never had any kind of trials in their life.
Right.
It's like watching paint dry. You know, I mean, they're just not interesting people. You know, I mean, not to steal a very corny saying, but I mean, you know, good seamen are not made in calm seas, right? Nope. And I'm sure it's said better than that.
100%.
But you know, I mean, the fact is that easily the biggest growth I've had in my life were either one coming out of a real, what at the time felt like an insurmountable crisis.
Right.
And secondly, I know something big and good is going to happen if I'm terrified. If I am terrified, I know this shit is going to be good because I've got so much on the line. You know what I mean? And I mean, think about your life. Think about the times where you've had the most anxiety in your life.
Yes.
It's always like right before something big happens.
Yes.
Right. And I don't know. I don't always like to say it's a good thing or a bad thing because that becomes very subjective. I've had some things in my life that seemed like, man, I made it. This was incredible. And it ended up being a nightmare. You know, when you look back on it.
Yes.
And I've had things that felt like, this is dog shit. How could this happen to me? And it ended up being the best thing that could have possibly happened at that time.
Yeah.
And so I don't know at what age that happened, but there was an age where and it might've been during all of this stuff, you know, like with my wife being sick with cancer, at the same time, I was going through some crazy physical things myself.
Yep.
You know, I have a story of, when I look back at that era, I have a story that I fall back on as like the moment where I knew kind of like how much of a dark place we were in at the time.
Right.
And what it was, I had, a year prior, I'd torn my bicep completely off the bone.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly substantial surgery to get it all back together. I mean, I've had numerous surgeries. I've had spine surgeries. I've had all kinds of knee surgery. Yeah. This one was not the most difficult surgery, but the longest to recover from because the ligaments have to graft back to the bone. So they drill holes through the bones of your forearm and then they pull the bicep back down and then they screw it all together. And then it takes about a year for it to come back.
God, the things we can do.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's incredible, right?
Crazy.
But so fast forward a year, my wife is diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm-hmm. And right, like literally at the same time, the same week, I tear my other bicep off the bone. So I'm just back training. I just recovered. I'm back in kind of a mental state where I'm back training again. And boom, my other bicep, boom, right off the bone. Same thing. Same surgeon, same surgery, everything. And I know at this point I'm out for another year, right? And I'm not a young man. I mean, I'm turning 50 this year. So a year of no exercise is like a decade when you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just don't bounce back,
100%, right?
100%. And so Melanie, my wife, we drive together to the hospital. I drop her off at the cancer center for her first round of chemo. So this is all new to her. I drop her off. I drive to the other side of the hospital, I park, I walk in, and I'm sitting there and I'm getting surgery. I'm in there, I'm going under the knife, I'm, you know, I'm doing the whole thing, I'm scrubbing everything, getting ready. So I go under the knife, I wake up, I come to, you know, I do my little recovery thing, and then Melanie leaves the cancer center, comes to the other side of the hospital to pick me up to drive me home from surgery. And I remember going home going, this is pretty fucked up, huh?
Yeah.
How did we get here? You know, we were both just, you know, doing our thing, you know, a couple weeks ago here. And now we're, you know what I mean? And
absolutely.
So that was when it really hit me, like, kind of like, we're in a really rough spot here, you know? And I mean, of course you have all the fears of not knowing what's going to happen to your wife, you know, you never get any clear answers because there are none, right? They can't tell you that you're going to be okay because they can't.
They don't have a crystal ball.
They can't. Right. Yeah. And as much as you need to hear that as a human, you're not going to get that from the medical community. They're not going to, you know, there's too much liability and, you know, there's just they just can't do it. So anyways, looking back on that, now that we're all in the clear, that for me is, rather than such a dark moment, it's almost like a moment of triumph.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You look back and they're like, like we were there and I remember still the way I felt and to feel that way and to feel, you know, to come out the other side of that, you just know that, man, you know, it sure makes life interesting, you know?
That's for damn sure. Now I want to marry the mental training that you have done through martial arts and to how that applies kind of every day. Was there something that you can kind of put it, you're going through this heinous time and you can't, what you just described, a writer would be, okay, we're on the path of something really, like, this is some good writing here. You know, there's some drama here happening.
Yeah.
Are there tangible things that you're able to, like, mental exercises or thought patterns that you have built throughout the years as a martial artist and as a coach that you're kind of clinging to at that point? Are there things that are tangible that you can kind of say, yeah, I'm going to use this technique to kind of help me weather the storm that we're going through?
I find that stoicism has helped me a lot over the years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, stoicism is very linked to the martial arts. You know, it has lots of different names. You know, you've got Bushido, you've got Buddhism, you've got all these things that have, you know, that have crossover
ideas,
you know, all those things, you know. And stoicism really helped me over the years because it helps me keep things in perspective. When you realize that you're just a speck flying through this universe.
Yes.
And really at the end of the day, nobody gives a shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's helped me through a lot of things in life. And, you know, when it comes to tragedy, when it comes to good things happening, like, it's really important not to get too blown up when things are going your way either, because these things are, you know, they're fleeting moments and it's important to enjoy them. but you can't hang your hat on them.
A business coach in my life has said to me, it's never as good as it seems. It's never as bad as it seems.
No. And I think that's fair. Yeah. You know, I really do. I think that's fair. I mean, there's moments where you're going to be, well, no, that's not, you know, like that day when I'm sitting there waiting to go into surgery, I would have told you to fuck off. Right? Absolutely. It's just that bad. Yeah. Right. But then you realize with the outcome, you're like, no, you were right. It wasn't, you know, we survived it. And, yeah. You know, some would argue that we're even better for it. Do you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. Absolutely.
And so, yeah.
But you just don't know it at the moment.
Yeah. How can you? You right. Can. You're so in it, yeah. You know, you're so in it that it's very hard. And so for me as a coach, you know, people, you know, you'd mentioned in the beginning about the physicality of coaching. I would argue that my coaching, the mental game is far more important.
Because you got the techniques down, you get the physical techniques.
I can teach
down,
anybody to throw a punch, right? And I could throw, you know, everybody in this room, I could show everybody how to throw a proper punch, you know, and not only a proper punch, but numerous proper technical punches, yes. Right? In a very short amount of time. But that doesn't mean you're ready to go in front of a few million people and putting it all on the line, right? That's a whole different, you know, that's a whole different level of anxiety, and that's not. Learning how to punch. Punching is not going to get you out of that, right? That is right. All your mind frame. And so for me, like I, you know, we laugh because I've got an office in the club and I never use it except when I have to talk to somebody about really, you know, like important stuff where we need some privacy, right? And that's not a very common thing, but it's been dubbed the office of tears because every time I bring somebody up there, it's usually because they're struggling or, you know, they're not doing what they need to do to get where they want to go. And there's a lot of emotion behind that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that office has become kind of like a, you know, like a doctor's office in the sense that, you know, and I'm not a doctor,
no, right?
but I am a good, you know, I'm a good listener.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, so, I mean, I get people in there with relationship problems and, you know, money problems and, you know, anything that sort of gets them distracted from their task. And when you're, taking on a fight in the UFC or Bellator or any of those big, you know, world shows, you can't be distracted. You know, if you don't have laser focus, you're going to lose, but losing in MMA isn't like losing in hockey.
No.
Right. Losing in hockey is like, you're in a team.
Yep.
You can kind of spread the blame a bit.
Yeah.
You can, and you're going to be there next week, right? Yes. And you can have the shittiest game and then you come back next week and you're a hero. Fighters fight 2-3 times a year, maybe, right?
Right.
When you lose a fight in the UFC, and a lot of people don't understand the pay structure. When you lose in the UFC, you don't just lose, you lose half your income.
Yep.
Like right off the top.
Yep.
Right. So you lose half your income and there's a decent chance that you're not going to have a job anymore, period. Right. So imagine like you're in the NHL, right? Let's say you're a goalie, right? Now imagine that every single game is a goalie. If you lose, you might not be playing hockey the next day.
Yeah.
That's the pressure the fighters have.
Absolutely.
Every time.
No 82 game fight season.
No. And like, you know, and to give you some perspective, a second string kicker in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, who never ever steps on the field has a secure job making $500,000 a year, minimum.
It ain't like that with fighters.
It ain't like that in fighting, right? No. You lose half your income. You may or may not fight again that year. You may or may not have a contract to fight again that year. And imagine now you've just fought in front of 10 million people in a UFC pay-per-view.
Yep.
And you lost your job because you got caught, right? Which happens when people are throwing fists at each other.
Yep.
And now you either... You're a 25-year-old at the peak of your career. Now you got some decisions. Do I retire at 25?
Yeah.
What have I been? You know, I've done nothing but train martial arts since high school, and probably before. Or do I go back and fight in front of 500 people in a gymnasium in Castlegar?
Right.
Right. And I mean, that's the drop.
Yeah.
Right. So it's imagine like
it being, is that severe.
So,
absolutely.
So it's like being in, playing in the Stanley Cup. And then the next day you're playing in the beer leagues in West Bank. You know what I mean? Like
and that's that fast.
It's that fast, right? Yeah. And I've seen that, you know, and I've been a part of that emotional roller coaster. And so if you don't have something like stoicism, and I mean, everybody has their own thing, you know, Rory McDonald, who's probably my most well-known fighter that I've developed, you know, he is religious, like, you know, like, boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
And I've seen that, you know, I mean, he's been a part of my life since he was 14. And, you know, and I've been through his growing pains from 14 to a, you know, a 30-year-old adult with his own family. And it's been an incredible thing to watch. But, you know, I've watched how he's how he's mentally prepared through all these, you know, and nobody's been in a more insane situation than Roy has in these. I mean, he's fought Robbie Lawler for the UFC title.
Some of the best.
Won the Bellator title, absolutely. You know, and I've been, and I was cage side for everyone. Right. And I mean, you know, we both lost a lot of, you know, I mean, I probably lost at least 5 years of my life just from stress from those fights. Right. But, you know, he used religion, you know, he used, you know, he'd bring his Bible with him and he would find comfort in that as a lot of people do. And, and, you know, whatever you do to find that peace of mind, you know, I think it's really important. You know, they call it the spirituality. You know, I grew up religious. I've never really been able to sort of, it's just not something that I've been able to sort of
hasn't personally get grabbed behind. You.
Yeah. That, it doesn't grab me, you know,
your heart. I find
the logical side of me has a hard time with some of the things. Right. But I do.
But there has got to be something that roots you. If you're going to take, like you talk about your office being the, you know, the room of tears or whatever, like I can't imagine that if you got somebody and I've seen you coach literally the amateur of the amateur of the amateur, like, you know, a 4-year-old all the way up to, I've watched you coach, Rory, you know, so the upper echelon, but as a coach, when somebody's off mentally, you probably see it immediately. It's probably one of those things where you, there's something going on today.
It happens to every fighter, every camp. It's not a sometimes thing. It's an all the time thing. You know, every week you have to remind these guys why they're doing it because it's not fun. Right. You know, it's not fun to show up every day and push yourself till you're just want to, you know, just collapse.
Yeah.
And not only that, but at the same time, having somebody punch you and try to choke you, you know what I mean? So, you know, there are days where that's the only thing you would want to do, but there's a lot of days dragging your ass out of bed to do that is not easy.
Yeah.
But you got to, because there's going to be a guy there or a girl, you know, depending on.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Well, right? You've trained elite. Absolutely. You've trained
in there.
Elite women.
Yeah. And we've got some females coming up that are just monsters.
Maria's going to fight soon. I'm excited about that.
She's a monster.
Yeah, absolutely.
She has a tremendous amount of opportunity ahead of her. You know, if she can stay the course. But I tell these guys, I'm like, everything that you do, if this is what you really want, you know, everything has to be dialed to that. So anything outside of that, it can't take precedent, you know, relationships, you know, the fact that you want to eat, you know, like these things
that we take for granted. Yeah, you're sacrificing the sacrifices. You're making
sacrifices right from top to bottom. And not everybody's capable or willing to do it.
Right.
And they just can't get out of their own way. Right. So me as a coach, I spend a lot of time, you know, I'm not always the most popular guy in the room because there's times where I'm, you know, I've got to call them on their bullshit, you know, and nobody likes, everybody knows, you know what I mean? We all know, you know, when you go to somebody and you're going for advice, it's very rare that you don't deep down know the answer. Right. You just don't want to, because it's
usually the thing that we don't want to do is usually the right thing to do.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's an uncomfortable reality that you would rather somebody say, hey, don't worry about it. Right. Yes. Do the easy thing.
Yes.
And, right. That's not my job as a coach. That would make me a really bad coach. Yeah. If I just told them what they wanted to hear, you know? And so I've been on the wrong end of some discussions where they weren't in the mood for it. You know, they didn't want to hear it, you know, and I'm not always right. You know,
sure.
Right. So, I mean,
we're all fallible.
Well, yeah, I would hope so. Right.
Yeah.
I haven't met somebody who wasn't yet. Yeah. But, you know, so, I mean, sometimes I say stupid things too. Right.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, I try to keep them. I want to see them succeed. There's no money in it for me. Do you know what I mean?
Like I do.
People have a really misunderstanding. I remember, when, you know, people would hear about my guys, like, I remember, like Matt Dwyer,
right?
He won 2 fight of the night bonuses in a row in the UFC. It was amazing. One of them was in Brazil. One of the coolest experiences I've ever been to. When we were walking out in Brazil, the entire stadium of about 20,000 people were all chanting in Portuguese to Matt, "You're gonna die." And we're walking out there, right? These two, you know, Canadian boys from K-Town, right? And, you know, and we're just, and Matt's like, you know, he's looking around. I'm like, "Matt, you're gonna win them over, my friend," right? You know, just kind of just trying to, you know, keep them from, you know, not exact, you know, like, holy, you know.
Yeah, how does that not
affect you?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, you know, and sure enough, he did this amazing technique, a Superman punch knockout. That was one of the knockouts of the year. And of course, the crowd at the end of it was chanting for him, right?
The respect is there.
The Brazilians just want to see a good scrap, right?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I mean, you go through these incredible experiences, with these guys. But again, yeah, like if you can't keep them focused, if you can't sort of keep them dialed in, you know, it's a problem. And a lot of my guys have lost contracts because of that, you know, not being able to do that, you know. And, you know, I would sit down and I would talk to them and you know, try to reason with them. Like, if this is what you want, you're not going to get it doing that.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, and unfortunately for some, they get it, but it's too late.
That's that luck you were talking about though, too. It's sometimes it's a timing thing. Sometimes it's a situational thing.
I've had, one of the most, victims of timing that I've ever had was, and you, I think you might know him. He's one of my fighters. He's retired now. Okay. You know, he's been one of my best friends for, you know, he's been with me since day one. You know, this club is what, 22 years old now. He's been with me like since the very beginning. His name is Mike Adams.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he was one of my, he's bantamweight now, but, we had him basically on the lips of the UFC for over a year, but they want to see him like win one more fight. And for a year, nobody would fight him.
Yeah.
Nobody, we could not get this man a fight. And like literally one more fight he was in, like that was where he was at. Right. They knew who he was.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things like get him another fight, you know, whatever. We could not get him a fight. It went on and on and on. Started moving into the second year. Now, Mike he's not a young man either, yeah. Right? I think he's a couple of years, so he's in his 40s now, yeah. Right? So, I mean, he was like in his mid-30s at the time, right? So, I mean, as a fighter, it's not that you're losing technique, but you're not recovering, right? Mm-hmm. And people will see me spar my UFC guys and they'll see me do good, right?
Sure.
Because, I mean, I've been doing this a long time.
Yep.
But that's not what get me. That's not, you know, like, why aren't you fighting still? It's like, okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm like, okay. That's a big difference between
what you're not seeing is you're not seeing tomorrow.
Yep.
Right. You're seeing right now. So tomorrow, right. I just did a 3-minute round with that UFC guy.
Yeah.
And I looked good. Okay.
Yeah,
I looked good. Tomorrow, I'm not getting out of bed till noon because I can't, right? Like, and I'm going to crawl to the kitchen because I can't move. It's going to feel like literally like I got like thrown off a bowl.
And right? That UFC guy is going and sparring with somebody else.
Already trained later that night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? He already came back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And so, right. I would never survive a fight camp. Like what these guys do, you know, like I used to get really pissed off because there's that saying that, coaches coach because they can't do. Right. Or whatever that saying
teacher,
is.
If you can't do, teach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, I always felt like that was a slap in the face a little bit to coaches.
Well, because, in your field, I can certainly see why.
Well, yeah, we're all very insecure. Right. And very ego driven. Right.
But but it's also, I mean, you got to know what you're doing. If you're teaching techniques to some of these people, I mean, you got to be able to do.
Yeah.
I don't think that phrase applies itself to you.
Yeah. But years later, I realized that it does because. Yeah. It does in the sense that, I can't fight competitively anymore.
Right.
And it's not because of my knowledge. It's not because of my skill set. It's just because my body can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that simple. I just wouldn't survive it. You know, I'd probably tear my bicep off like week two of fight camp.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or I'd need another knee surgery, or I'd finally need that next surgery that I've been putting off for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Right. So in a sense, you know, it killed me to admit it, but they weren't wrong, right? It just wasn't quite the way that I had sort of, you know, for me, that was like saying that, you know, I suck now, right? No, I don't suck, 100%. Right?
It's really easy for the ego to get involved in a place like that.
Yeah, but it was definitely, you know, it is like, you know, I just can't do it, right? And it's one of those things that you have to accept getting older, that I don't accept limitations.
Right.
But I also don't believe in living in fantasy either, right?
Right.
You know, and I've never seen anything good come out of being delusional.
Yeah.
Never. Whether it's myself or the people around me. And again, that sort of, I think that's my Irish mom,
you know,
in my ear, right? She was always the,
She would ground you.
Yeah. I mean, my friends are, she's very negative. I was like, no, like she's protecting me, but she's the half empty Irish mom.
Yes.
Right. And that wasn't always appreciated, but I always knew the bad shit that was going to happen. Maybe. Right.
I feel you. You know, it's what martial art, what discipline did you start with?
Oh, like everybody. Taekwondo.
Oh, you're Taekwondo. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause that's what it was like when we were growing up. Yeah. I'm in my mid 40s, Gen Xers. You know, I had a friend who was in karate. I had a friend who was in Taekwondo. I had a friend who was in Kung Fu. You know, they never mixed up or anything like that. And then many times those friends, would, you know, a Taekwondo guy would come run into a kickboxer, and then they realize, oh, the shit, there's holes here. And they start comparing notes. And that's where, you know, you see these other disciplines come into it. So you started with Taekwondo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're going even further than that, I think my very first martial art when I was like six was like Tai Chi Chuan or something like that.
Yeah.
Like a very soft style of Kung Fu. It's kind of like the combative side of Tai Chi.
Okay. You know okay. I mean? Yep. Yep.
If you want to, you know, if you want to go that far, right, and say that, but
Taekwondo is where you really dug in.
Taekwondo is where I was like trying to kick people.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like making contact and stuff. But I remember in '93, I remember seeing. Well, it would have been UFC 2.
Yep.
I saw in '94. So I didn't see the first one because it wasn't televised.
Yeah,
I didn't see it till later.
Yeah, no, it was in video stores afterwards.
VHS.
We used
to pass it around.
100%. Yeah, a lot of tape trading.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you got information. This is pre-internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember seeing that. I mean, and I remember watching Hoist Gracie.
Yeah.
And I remember looking him going, I don't know what he's doing. Like just like it was just so it was like alien shit to me.
Yeah.
And I remember back then thinking, if you put a couch in front of my legs, I'd be dead. Cause that's all I could do. Right. And I could kick really well.
Sure.
But that was it. Right. Yep. And I'm like, you know, how would I handle if this, you know, Hoist guy, you know, what is
wrapped me up?
Yeah. He looks like a python. Right. And I was like, I have to know that, you know? And so, you know, martial arts have always been that way for me too, is again, and it's human nature, right? You either, when you see something new, you either pretend it doesn't exist.
Yes.
And in many cases, try to discredit it for what it is.
You're going exactly where I was actually going to take that. And I want to just bring up the word ego for a second.
Yes.
And there are many times, and one of the things that I know that you're very good at doing, whether it's a businessman like me who comes in and comes in three or four times a week to learn a new skill and whatnot, or right up to the elite fighter, you're really good at, I don't know if you take somebody's ego and you just put it aside and you get them to forget that their ego exists or whatever, but you made a decision back then, instead of entrenching, letting your ego take over and say, no, Taekwondo is the way to go. It's the best one out there, blah, 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 blah. Like so many people do. You actually looked and said, oh, wait a second. Mm-hmm. There's more to this. And you're able to put your ego aside. What are some ways that you do that? What are some ways that you're able to take that ego and move it over and look at things clearly, or teach your people how to do that?
Yeah. I mean, for ego, for me, it was very simple. We all have ego.
Sure.
We all do. And I don't think that ego is necessarily toxic.
Okay.
I think that it has, like everything, it has levels that become toxic.
So unchecked ego.
Yes.
Is,
right.
Okay.
It's like water, right? I mean, water, we need it to survive, but there is a level where water becomes toxic, right? I have a very good psychiatrist friend who was telling me about, you know, this client that he had that was killing themselves by getting like wasted on water. It was, like they will drink this until their potassium and their electrolytes and everything are so messed up that they get high off of this stuff and they will kill themselves eventually.
Right.
Ego is very similar. I think ego is what drives us to do better. I think it creates that sort of that uncomfortableness that we're never really satisfied.
Right.
But unchecked ego is where you move backwards. You try to protect what you have instead of trying to grow.
Right.
And so for me, it was pretty simple. You know, I mean, I've got an ego like everybody else, but I wanted to be the best at it. For me personally, I wanted to be like, how can I be the best at what I do?
Yeah.
And there's not really room for ego if that's your goal. Mm-hmm. You know, like you got to eat a lot of shit sandwiches to get good at stuff that you suck at. And so, you know, for me, when I was doing Taekwondo, I knew I could kick well. You know, I did it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I kick people in the face. It's like, I can do this. But I also knew that my boxing sucked.
Right.
I knew that I had terrible hands. And this whole grappling thing was like like I said, it was
completely
like,
different language.
Yeah. It's not even, yeah, it wasn't even in this, it wasn't even in, you know, in anything that I had any familiarity with, you know, I didn't even know, like back then I was like wrestling. Like that's like,
yeah, who needs that?
It's like cheerleading or something. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, that's what you kind of did when you couldn't play football or whatever. Knowing now what I know now is like, no, those guys are some of the toughest, badassest athletes on the planet. Yes. Right. But growing up in Kelowna, there's no wrestling program.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, you I just didn't don't know anything about it. Right.
Yeah.
So I had to basically, I had to become like, I had to search for this stuff, you know, and when you're searching for stuff that you suck at, that everybody else is better at,
yeah,
there's no way to humble yourself more than that, you know, to always be the guy who sucks, right, at the different things, right? And then eventually you don't suck anymore.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think, and then some people won't even step up to the bar. Like, mm-hmm. like knowing that, you know, a lot of people, they just take that first suck experience, yeah. whatever. And they're like, oh, too hard, not going to do that. But that's where growth mm-hmm. is.
I saw it all, especially in the early days of the club, because yeah. back then it was still, MMA was still young enough where there was still this sort of martial art versus martial art mentality.
Yeah.
That's gone now, right? MMA yeah. is a sport unto itself now. Nobody really tries to, you know, oh, my kung fu master would, you know, too dangerous for the, you know, that stuff.
Like the
really
old
happen.
School movies. Like, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
right? yeah. But in the beginning I had that a lot. And so I would have guys coming in and trying to challenge what I was doing. I had guys coming in and telling me, oh, my kung fu is better than your whatever, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And it was a very interesting time because yeah. I was young too, so I really enjoyed that sort of that conflict, right? For yep. me, it was like, okay.
Well, you're fascinated by it.
I'm like, awesome.
I want to see what happens when a Taekwondo guy goes up against a Muay Thai guy. And
I had guys come in with like, and they, and like literally like, I mean like with like, the only thing that's martial arts are closer to than fighting is religion. Especially traditional martial arts. There's yeah. a very religious faith-based belief system. Because before the UFC, you didn't have to prove it. If you had a black belt around your waist, you yep. were the shit.
Yep.
Like, you didn't need to prove anything else.
Nope.
You had a black belt,
yep.
right? And I remember like growing up, I'm like, that guy's better than me.
Yeah.
And not only better at martial arts, he's probably better than me at life, at everything,
yep.
right? Because he's a black belt, yep. right? But the problem is, as I got older, I saw how abusive that mentality was. So you had these black belts that were, I mean, one of my Taekwondo instructors ended up in prison for molesting kids. Oh, I had another Taekwondo instructor who stole a bunch of money from parents because he had a gambling problem and disappeared.
So these black belts weren't living up to what belt meant in your mind.
No, they were snake oil salesmen, right? Yeah. And they never had to back it up. So I wanted to be the opposite of that. I wanted to be literally the exact polar opposite. So I've never been called sensei in my club. I've yeah. never wanted that sort of yes sir, Mr. Lee sir bullshit.
Right.
I was always, I'm Dave. If you want to call me something else, that's fine. I'll probably answer to it.
Yeah.
But I'm David, right? David, call me coach if you really want to make it formal. But I'm never going to, I don't line up people by their rank.
Yeah.
You know, because I saw so much abuse come from that hierarchy where you had like lower belts and they just like worship these upper belts and they were for nothing other than this 2 inches around their waist.
Yeah.
Right. And it didn't matter if they were good human beings or not.
Right.
And so it was important for me to never have that. You know, I really wanted it to be a merit-based system where it's like, if you like me, it's not because I'm wearing a black belt, it's because I've treated you well and I'm teaching you good stuff.
Yes.
That works. And if you spar me, you're going to feel that I know what I'm doing. Right. And to me, that was what was important.
Absolutely. And I mean, as somebody who's observed, I used to come in and watch Rory or Sarah train mm-hmm. and I'd come in, I did some classes myself. So I yeah. learned a few basic things and I can't wait till COVID's done so I can come and do that again.
Yeah.
But I would come in and watch some of the classes or watch Lachlan, Mike's kid, my best friend's son.
Great kid.
Yeah,
great
absolutely. Kid. Yeah. And watching some of those classes where you're watching Lachlan, who's 14, mm-hmm. 15 years old, getting some proficiency in this, yeah. but all lined up against the wall and sparring with people in the UFC
yeah.
or people who it's their first night there.
Yeah.
I love watching that level playing field that you created in there. It was such a, neat thing. You're literally watching iron sharpen iron.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool, it's just such a cool energy or vibe that you had in that place.
It is, you know, we kind of kid about all these safe spaces and all this, you know, stuff right now. But it really is there. Like
that is a safe space.
It didn't matter. It did not matter who you were. You know, it doesn't matter what religion you were, what race you were, how you identified.
Gender, none of that stuff.
None of it fucking matters. Nope. You know, you come in and we're there to make each other better martial artists and just have a good time. And that becoming a better martial artist, I mean, it was physical. You get into better shape.
Yeah.
But it's, man.
The Office of Tears. I have never
had somebody walk out of those doors more stressed out than when they got there.
Yeah.
Like people would come in with the weight of the world on their shoulders. And after an hour of just jujitsu and the mental chess and the physical chess of these martial arts, it's like your brain gets a timeout, right? Yeah. It's meditation. You know, it's meditation with punches, you know, and, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, that's probably been the hardest thing for my student base with COVID is because, you know, us with like many businesses, we've been shut down during all of this pandemic stuff. Martial arts was hit really hard during this.
Absolutely.
And that's what I get is I get all these phone calls from not only students, but parents of some of my youth programs. And that's what they're struggling with. It's not that like, oh, little Jimmy's getting a pot belly because he's playing video games. It's like, no, you know, he's depressed right now. He's feeling isolated. He's feeling disconnected, you know, and that's probably the one thing that I'm really excited about getting back going again is having that outlet for these people, you know, that sort of, we all need it. You know, some people run, you know, they get that clear mind from running. Some people get it from, you know, meditating. Some people get it from prayer.
Yep.
You know, we get it from trying to choke each other, you know?
Well, nothing but like you said, you get distracted.
Yeah.
And you get punched or you get choked or you get, you know, whatever.
You're not worried about, you know, the mean thing that somebody said to you at work. Nope. You're not worried about the fact that, you know, you've got an unpaid gas bill at home.
Yep.
You're too busy just living in the moment, you know, and everybody needs that, you know, at least a few times a week. You need that, right? Whatever it is, you know, and I have no judgment on how people get that, you know, whether it's tying flies, you know, going fishing, you know, whatever, right? Yeah. Reading books, whatever, but everybody needs that. And I find that people that are struggling the most, they've stopped that part of sort of self-care.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I do very, very much.
You know,
so.
and like, I really felt that when I was going through some of my stuff, I'm sure that year that you were going through your stuff with your granddaughter, you know, that's when you get so wrapped up into it, you realize I haven't looked after myself.
Yes.
Like people were like, by the time, you know, I was dealing with sort of the rougher parts of Melanie's treatment because chemotherapy it's a nasty thing to go through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't just kill cancer cells. It kills everything.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, that's the job of chemo, right?
Yes.
And I mean, as my wife is withering away, so was I, you know, it was like, you know, obviously not the same, but there's that mirroring. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was weird. Like I remember people would be like, you know, you got to eat a sandwich, Dave.
you know? Because that stuff just doesn't become all of it goes on hold.
Yeah.
And you just absolutely, yeah. I know that feeling as you're saying it, I'm identifying with that.
Yeah.
I told you it's going to go fast and it has gone by really fast. We got to move. But that being said, one day I'm going to have you back. We're going to talk more about this stuff and
anytime,
different facets
like,
of coaching
anytime.
And all that. But I want to talk a little bit about you and Toshito right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, you're on hold and I love one of the reasons I love you is that you are resilient and you do have this champion mindset. You do have this coach's mindset.
I try.
Well, you do. And you've known that you've had to sort of pivot a little bit.
I do want to say one thing though.
Please.
All right. And this is really important for people listening.
Yeah.
It's easy to sound good when you're doing well, right? I went through some dark shit too. You know what I mean? So I don't want people to like sort of lose that in these conversations. It's okay to feel like shit. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
That's important.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah.
My life motto is I try not to focus on the problem. I try to focus on the solution.
Yeah.
And I look and a lot of good coaches, they just do that automatically.
Yeah.
You've had this place where for 14, 15 months where your gym has been like your livelihood.
Yeah.
You're still coaching elite fighters, which is great. But all those people that would be there three, four nights a week, you know, they can't, they're not allowed to come in your
facility. I hear from them every day.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. And the cool thing is you've actually been above board about not breaking the rules. You've been trying to be part of the solution of this pandemic, and you've taken the responsibility that if, hey, people aren't social distancing, then that's, you know, slowing down the process of us being able to get back to normal. So you've taken the harder road of actually coming to grips with what this is doing to business. Now you've also pivoted and you've gotten your real estate license along the way.
Yeah. You know, the one thing, you know, whenever a door closes, right. But the one thing about having a business closed for this long is it gives you lots of time to think and reflect on moving forward. And one thing that we did at the beginning of this is we ended up selling a rental property. And that was, I had mentioned to you, that was sort of what was keeping us afloat during all of this. But with that, I wanted to get educated on what I do with some of this money that I made through this property. And I wanted to get into real estate. But when I talked to my mortgage broker, as you can imagine, this conversation, Dave, your business is currently closed. You show absolutely no income whatsoever. And we're heading into COVID and banks are nervous as it is. So yeah, no, people weren't lining up.
Yeah, but Rory's got to fight in front of an empty arena.
It's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. Trust me. Right. And people weren't lining up to give me mortgages.
Sure.
And so I was like, I might as well get educated, right? I've got nothing else going on. So I thought, I'm just going to get my license. I didn't have any intentions of even selling real estate.
Right.
I thought, if I'm going to sit here on my ass, I might as well be doing something. So yeah. I got educated. I got my license, or actually in the process, I've passed everything. I just have to get my license through the council, the real estate council of BC here in a couple of weeks.
So you got some paperwork to do. By the time this airs, you'll probably have it.
Yeah, I would think so. And then, of course, as I'm doing that, I'm telling people what I'm doing. They're like, dude, you know everybody in Kelowna. I'm like, you, Mike, right? Yeah. I know everybody in Kelowna, right? You know, I mean, we're in Kelowna. It's a bigger city, but it's still like you're 1 degree away from somebody that you know. If you've been here for 20 years, and especially in a service industry like me, where I've got, you know, hundreds of people through the door any given week, you know, and so they're like, why don't you sell real estate? Like people... they trust you. They know that you're an honest person. Yep. So we're going to, you know, I'm going to kind of fit that in. You know, the club, it's really funny because I think this whole, the club thing and the real estate thing, all this is just going to start like happening at the same time. Yeah. So I'm going to go from like this quiet before the storm into chaos. And I can't wait.
Well, champions are made in the off season and it's what you do with that. And you've taken this off season and you haven't just, you know, laid down and you could have. Mm-hmm. You know, what you've gone through in the last few years, you and your wife, your physical body, you could have just laid down once you kind of realized, all right, we're going to be pseudo okay.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, it doesn't go another, you know, 15, 16 months. You could have just kind of kicked back and said, that's it. But you didn't, you went and leveled yourself up in that. And I commend you for that. That is leading by example, which is what you want from your coach.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that.
Well, it's the truth. And I'm grateful that you did that. Are we able to publicize? Okay. So do you have a website yet for your real estate? Do you know
any of that? Nothing yet.
Okay.
In about 2 weeks, man, it's all going
to
be out there.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure with our social media, we throw that out there.
Yeah.
For anybody out there that's looking to buy real estate or sell real estate in the Okanagan Valley in Kelowna, very robust market as well. David Lee's going to be doing that as well. And if you are in the area, I mean, this podcast breaches way outside of the Okanagan Valley, but at the same time, this is a world-class MMA coach that just lives right here.
We have visitors from all over the world all the time. I would love to meet anybody that you send our way.
Oh, anybody who comes to Kelowna. So Toshido MMA, and then David Lee, the man himself. And I just appreciate you allowing me to utilize our friendship to you to come and do this. Success does leave clues. Yeah. And there's a lot of guys out there who just hearing some of these things are going to make them look at their lives in a different dimension. And I just want to say thank you very much for opening up and being as vulnerable as you have been.
When you invited me, I was so excited. We haven't talked.
I know. Yeah, exactly. You know. And it's
COVID.
Been too long. Goddamn COVID. Thank you, David, for being here. I really appreciate it. They go by so fast. They do every single one of them. And I just appreciate the entire He Changed It team appreciates everybody who is supporting, who's downloaded the app already, who shared the app, subscribed to the podcast, shared it out. Thank you so much. There's a buzz about what it is that we're doing. And at the end of the day, we want to create resources for men to have an easier time out there, whatever it may be. That's why we have these conversations. That's why He Changed It exists. And that's why the official podcast of He Changed It, HeCast, exists. So thank you very much for taking time out of your day to be here. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something.